Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. I am your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. I just came here from a commemoration in my home city of Alexandria, Virginia, a commemoration, a memorial, a remembrance, as it were, of the Holocaust. The Holocaust, of course, is the English name for the systematic attempt to annihilate all of the Jews of Europe, which Hitler largely succeeded in doing, taking the Jewish population in the world, which was about 17 million at the time, and taking it down to 11 million. More than one out of every three Jews worldwide were murdered in the 5-6 year period from 1939 to 1945. This Thursday is Yom HaShoah, which is Hebrew for the Day of the Shoah, which is what Israelis call the Holocaust. Shoah actually is actually a better word than Holocaust. It means complete annihilation, destruction, just a clear wiping out. It's a better word. And I actually wasn't going to talk about this today, but the more I think about it, the more I think about that we really haven't remembered those lessons. What should we learn and think about 70 years after the Nuremberg trials? I mean, most Holocaust survivors are dying out, frankly. They are still among us, and many are in their 80s and 90s. And in 15, 20 years, they may no longer be left alive. And yet, Holocaust denial, and more importantly, genocidal hatred, continue to this day. In fact, Great Britain, you may have heard, or probably you haven't heard, because it wasn't big news in the United States, is racked by a scandal. The Labour Party of Britain had to suspend more than 50 of its members for being rabidly anti-Semitic, for Jew hatred. Including praise of Hitler and questions about whether all the Jews in Israel couldn't be transferred to the United States. And I think the left has a problem with anti-Semitism. Note, I say the left, not liberals, but the left. In fact, I think that's one of the distinguishing features between the left and liberals. And sometimes it's hidden in anti-Israel criticism. And obviously, people have a right to criticize Israel, criticize the nation's government. Nothing wrong with that. I criticize the American government all the time. But there's a difference between criticizing a government of a country and basically saying the country has no right to exist. When you start saying a country has no right to exist, or as Iran's leaders say, wipe Israel off the map, then you're talking, well, genocide. You're advocating the systematic murder of millions of innocent people. You would think that we had learned lessons from the Holocaust. And I dare say in America, there is far less anti-Semitism, far less Jew hatred than around the world. But we have our own hatreds in America. We have Muslim hatred. We have immigrant hatred. Indeed, I would argue that the campaign of Donald Trump is largely based on hatred. In Europe, that hatred is often turned toward Jews. In fact, there's an election coming up on Thursday in Great Britain. Two very different questions. One question that has a lot of people talking, it's actually an interesting economic question. It's whether Great Britain should leave the European Union. It's not just an economic question, it's a political question as well. A very important question. They're even calling it the Brexit, the British exit. And polls show, well, either side could win. And I think that case can be made for British exit from the European Union, and certainly a case can be made for them staying in. That's actually an interesting and complex topic. But also on the ballot on Thursday is a mayor's race in London. And indeed, it was the former mayor of London, Labour leader Ken Livingstone, who said all kinds of interesting things about Hitler recently, basically saying that Hitler was a Zionist, to which I forget which British leader said that that wasn't just offensive, it was historically illiterate. And he has refused to apologize for that comment. More recently, Labour MPs, members of Parliament, have said all kinds of things, including tweeting that Israel was drinking the blood of Gaza. That, for those of you who don't know, is a reference to the ancient Jewish blood libel. This libelous notion, this false notion, came in the Middle Ages when Jews across Europe were accused of killing Christian children and using their blood to bake matzah for Passover. To which Jews ruefully said, I guess that's why matzah is red. Of course, matzah is not red. Matzah is a pretty dry cracker without much taste that is used by Catholics worldwide as the wafers that they take in communion. Matzah, of course, is as old as the Exodus from Egypt, 4,000 years old. It may be fairly tasteless, but it assuredly has nothing to do with blood or human sacrifice. But this ridiculous idea, this libel, and that is what a libel is, this defamation, was used as an excuse to murder tens of thousands of Jews all across Europe from the Middle Ages till, well, today, where certain Arab leaders continue, including in Iran, to proclaim this libel to be true. It was famously published in the forgery put forward by the Tsar and communist leaders, what they call the Protocols, the Elders of Zion. It's an ancient Jewish blood libel. Of course, it is false. But more importantly, anyone who spreads such a thing or spreads Holocaust denial, these aren't people who are criticizing the government of Israel. These are people who are not just hating Jews, but in many ways advocating a continuation of the Holocaust. And if you don't think we've forgotten the Holocaust with regard to Jews all around the world, and I dare say America is better than almost any other country in that regard, then why is it that there's virtually no mention of a murderous bombing of Aleppo, Syria's largest city, where the government of Syria, the prime minister, or whatever, the dictator, Assad, supported by Russia and Iran, bombed a market, killing hundreds of people, men, women, and children, bombed a market where people are shopping. The government of Syria bombed a market, a Syrian market, not a military installation, not an accident, not a bomb that went astray. They intentionally murdered men, women, and children, and indeed, we're probably now approaching 300,000. I was on the air complaining about the Syrian government's mass murder when it was 3,000. Now we're approaching 300,000. When we say never forget, do we mean it? When we say those who don't remember history are condemned to repeat it, is it that we don't remember history or that we close our eyes to all this pain? I get the people who say, you know, America has enough problems. We shouldn't, we've wasted lots of money and treasure and lives in the Middle East. I largely agree on many issues. I oppose the war in Iraq very strongly. What murderous Saddam Hussein had done, including gassing the Kurdish people, occurred in the 90s. He wasn't currently murdering people. One can't say the same about the Syrian dictator. It's why I think, by the way, that Hillary Clinton has a much more realistic vision of foreign policy than either Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders, for that matter. I'm expecting a lot of y'all to disagree. But the general point, and you may disagree on the specifics, I think the general lesson of the Holocaust And the Nuremberg trials, which were 70 years ago this month, is that there are certain crimes against humanity. Yep, September 11th was a crime against America. It was an attack. It was a, you know, Pearl Harbor was an attack on America. There are certain attacks on America that we have to respond to. I would argue there are also certain crimes against humanity. Bill Clinton famously was asked his biggest regrets on his presidency. And the two he mentioned were both genocide. One was failure to act sooner in Bosnia, and the other was failure to act in Rwanda. In both cases, you had government intentionally murdering tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, in some cases, of innocent civilians. Do we have a responsibility to try to stop that? One could argue that a small country doesn't, that there's only so much Canada or Denmark can do. They can feel for the countries, but they can't exactly go to war. But we are the most powerful country on earth. I can give you all kinds of foreign policy reasons and realpolitik why the United States should, as a matter of national interest, be opposed to genocide. I could. But I have to admit, that's just, in some ways, it's rationalization. I sincerely believe we have a moral obligation to stop the intentional mass murder of hundreds of thousands of civilians. It's why I realize this is unpopular. Frankly, it's unpopular among the left and the right, and I'm a politician. And I don't really vote on foreign policy much in Virginia. But I believed we should have set up a no-fly zone in Syria way back in 2011. And yes, I know that costs money. I think it would have stopped ISIS, frankly. I don't think people in America have any clue as to what ISIS is about. Here in the news, ISIS is a bloodthirsty group of terrorists that are out to kill Americans and Westerners. And that's all true. I'm not saying that's false. It's true. But to only say that is to misunderstand what ISIS is all about. That's what its leaders are about, to be sure. They are bloodthirsty terrorists. They hate Americans. They hate Christians. They hate Jews. They hate Shia Muslims. And they, Yazidis, they kill and murder men, women, and children. That's all true. But this group would not exist without support. There'd be a few thousand, maybe, ridiculous, crazy, dangerous, bloodthirsty thugs. There's bloodthirsty thugs all over the globe. The reason why ISIS has so much support is because desperate Syrians and desperate Iraqis are fleeing from genocide and are supporting whomever they can get to stop murdering their families. So I have zero sympathy for ISIS. I do have some sympathy for Syrian people feeling very desperate. There are refugees all over the globe. No one is accepting them. Very few, I should say, countries are accepting them. There are refugee camps in Jordan. They try to come to the West. People like Donald Trump want to keep them out. But what do you think fuels the terrorism? What fuels the terrorism is this desperate people. We have lots of lessons to learn from the Holocaust, not just what happened 70 years ago, although we absolutely need to teach it and understand it and remember. But lessons for today, lessons for 2016, vital lessons that I ask all of you to remember. Feel free to call in at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I know these are heavy topics that I'm bringing up today. I still do invite you to call in at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275, and feel free to disagree with me. It's fine if you do. You know, when it comes to something like genocide or the Holocaust, It is a lot easier to turn away. I think it's human nature to turn away. I think when we hear of the massive suffering in Syria, it's just, you don't want to think about it. Why would you? It's horrific. Innocent men, women, and children blown to smithereens by their own government. Hundreds of thousands. It's hard to imagine. And when you think about Syria, this is not a country that is, you know, been war-torn for generations where people are, no one should ever be used to awful war. This is a country that was a fairly Western country for an Arab dictatorship. It wasn't a particularly religious country, for example. I mean, people were Muslim, Sunni, and Shia, but it wasn't like a theocracy by any stretch. People were very modern. They weren't particularly practicing, doctors and lawyers and so forth. It was a fairly calm country. And we don't have to get into, unless you want to, the whole history of the Arab Spring and how this came to be. But it strikes me, and I was thinking again about lessons from the Holocaust, that there is a tendency to, and I'll just say it, to blame Jews for things that people don't blame other people for. I think, I have to admit, it's much more of a European tendency than an American one. I thank God every day that I'm an American, that my family is here. My family's been here more than 100 years now. But I thank God every day that I'm an American. Because if I lived in Britain right now, as a Jew, and you think of Great Britain as a pretty free country, right? We think of England as America's ally across the Atlantic. Or France, again, a modern Western nation. It's very, very hard to be Jewish in England or France right now. People don't talk about that very much either. But the head of the Labour Party in Britain, it's an anti-Semite. And is suddenly being called on it. Some could argue it's partly because of these elections in London coming up Thursday. But when you get someone like Emma Thompson, the award-winning actress, who was a big Labour Party supporter, and the Labour's the left, right? You wouldn't hear me support conservatives normally. And she says she can't support Labour anymore because of the Jew hatred in the Labour Party. That tells you something. And I'm going to say something that you will rarely hear from me. First of all, I rarely comment on another country's elections. And certainly I rarely support conservatives over liberals. But I hope at least in London the conservatives trounce Labour in Thursday's election as a lesson. As a lesson that any kind of racism, any kind of Jew hatred is not appropriate in modern age. It just isn't. That doesn't mean you can't criticize Israel. Of course you can. But just because every criticism of Israel is an anti-Semitic, that doesn't mean that no criticism of Israel is Jew hatred. Indeed, if you single out Israel and pretend that Israel is doing something uniquely awful in the world, without talking about Syria and Russia and Iran and China and North Korea and Cambodia and Rwanda, countries that have done infinitely worse, then yeah, you're a Jew hater. It's Mark Levine. Call in if you want. 888-48-MARK. Back after this.
Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm talking about some difficult topics today, and I'm ranging from, well, all over the world. It Yom HaShoah, the day in memory of the Holocaust, is coming up. It actually begins tomorrow night, lasts through till Thursday. This is a commemoration that has been, well, pretty much ever since the end of the Holocaust. It occurs a couple weeks before Israeli Independence Day, and it's sort of the sad moment before the happy moment in Israel. In fact, on Yom HaShoah, Holocaust Memorial Day, a siren rings throughout the entire country of Israel. I don't remember whether it's 2 minutes or five. Maybe it's 5 minutes. And it's an amazing sight. I haven't been there when this happens, but I've seen video of it. When the siren rings at, I think it's precisely noon, everyone in Israel, if they're driving,
They stop their car in the middle of the street. They get out of their cars, and they observe a moment of silence. It's amazing. All highways stop. I mean, everyone. It's you know, if they're in the office, they stop working. They stand up in memory. People come out of their houses. It's an amazing moment, really. It's an entire country remembering the loss of one-third of the Jewish people. I don't know in modern times. I'm trying to think whether the Rwandan genocide, or the Cambodian genocide, Darfurian genocide, Syrian genocide, all awful, terrible things. I don't know if one-third of a people has been murdered since the Holocaust. I know gypsies in the Holocaust were decimated. I couldn't tell you whether it was a third or not. Of course, gay people, gay men, were put in jail as well, although they weren't typically not sent to the gas chambers as much as the Jews, generally just imprisoned. And I say that as a gay man as well. That doesn't in any way lessen it, but just we should know the levels. My question is, what does this mean for us today? What are the lessons of the Holocaust for us today? Do we have a moral obligation to try to prevent genocides around the globe, to help save refugees? In 1939, the U.S. St. Louis sailed from Germany with 900 Jewish men, women, and children fleeing for their lives. It made it all the way to the shores of the United States. We didn't let them in. We even tried, people asked President Roosevelt, could they get into the U.S. Virgin Islands? We could do it really quietly. We know there's a tremendous amount of hatred towards Jews in the United States, which there was in the 1930s. Maybe we could sneak them into the U.S. Virgin Islands. Roosevelt said no. And the ship was sent back to Germany, where the vast majority of them were massacred, gassed, shot. People are unaware, I think, of the powerful Jew hatred in America in the 1930s. A Gallup poll, this always surprises people because I don't think it exists. There's definitely anti-Semitism in America today, but I as a Jew, I concede that it's far less, far less than anti-LGBT hatred, far, far less than racism or anti-Muslim hatred or anti-Latino or anti-immigrant hatred. I mean, all the ones that Donald Trump is pressing on, he's winning elections because anti-Muslim, anti-Latino, anti-black racism is stronger in America than anti-Semitism. It is. In Britain, they win elections. The Labour Party wins elections by hating Jews because there, hating Jews is stronger than some of these other things. The Labour Party's been called to task for that, and I think that's a good thing as well. But few people realize that when they say, you know, why didn't American Jews speak out more in the 1930s? My mom tells the story in the 1930s, 1940s. She was growing up in Mississippi. She was a 4-, 5-, 6-year-old girl, but she sure remembers her neighbor with the Nazi swastika painted on his garage. Next door neighbor. Kind of like if you're a black person, your neighbor burning a cross. It's not a very pleasant sight. And you may be surprised to know that Gallup polls in the 1940s, Gallup, very respected polling organization, asked Americans, who is your greatest enemy? And there was a list. There were the Germans, the Japanese. It's the middle of World War II, right? Germans, Japanese. They had Italians. They had Jews. And in 1939, 1940, and 1941, the leading enemy of America, according to most Americans, was the Jews. Did you know that? Japan was second. Germany was third. In 42, Japan was the highest. It was right after Pearl Harbor. But 43, 44, in the midst of the Holocaust, more Americans feared Jews than they did Japanese or Germans. I realize that's not America anymore. I thank God that that's not America anymore. I think the Holocaust woke up many Americans to that. Who'd be hated in America today? Just ask Donald Trump supporters, Muslims, undocumented immigrants. There's some misogyny out there, hatred of women, to be sure. And I think those of us who remember the Holocaust have an obligation to remember and to think about and to focus on other refugee populations today in 2016, particularly those fleeing violence And yes, I'm referring to the Syrian refugees. And I think one of the main reasons why we don't want a lot of Syrian refugees in here is unreasoned anti-Muslim hatred. I don't want to allow any terrorists in. But 99.99% of these refugees are fleeing terrorism. They're not the terrorists themselves. I think we have a lot of lessons from the Holocaust, and I'm sad to say, I think America's forgetting many of them. 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. Let's go to Mary in Albuquerque on line one. Hey, Mary. Thank you for calling in on this. It's a difficult topic, and I appreciate
you. I could have been one of your constituents until I moved back out here.
Okay. Well, great. Well, come on back to Alexandria anytime.
But I wanted to say, you know, I wonder whether some of the hatred of Jews going on now in England maybe has to do with money. I did read something in our paper here just recently that there's growing inequality in Britain. But I remember reading a book, it was sort of set up like a Michener novel, you know, with starting like at bedrock going all the way up to modern times. But I think some of it was factual, although a novel. And in early Christianity in Europe, they couldn't be money lenders because of usury laws.
That's right.
And so the Jews were the lenders, and I think it persists to this day that among some people that they think that the Jewish folks have all the money and exorbitant interest rates and
let me try to respond to a bunch of what you said, then I'll let you continue. First of all, obviously income inequality and racial hatred are two different things. Now, Germany suffered great privations in the 1920s and 1930s. They had lost World War One. The Treaty of Versailles was particularly harmful to Germany, and it was punitive, no question about it. They had hyperinflation to try to, avoid, basically by making the Deutschmark, worthless. It was a way to pay the French back, and of course it caused massive economic troubles. So we had a massive worldwide recession in the 1930s. All that's true. And yet, of course, it doesn't justify what happened in Germany later. So I want to just be very, very clear that I think in times of economic inequality, people do look for scapegoats. Point conceded.
Yeah.
But obviously, they need to concede, go after the right. And for the moneylenders thing, I'd just be happy to just get a little bit of history on that. So Jews were forbidden in Europe from owning land. They couldn't own property. They couldn't own real estate. They couldn't own their own houses. That's why many of them were put into ghettos, where actually other people owned the land. So they couldn't be farmers. They couldn't have a house. One of the few things they could do, because you're absolutely right, it was prohibited under Christian law, was lend money. Now, a few Jewish families, the Rothschilds are probably the most famous, were, no question, moneylenders. Now, not the vast majority of Jewish people, a few. But, for example, to this day, back then and to this day, the vast majority of banks are not owned by Jews. You look at the great, J.P. Morgan, for example, or Andrew Carnegie, or any of the great industrialists that brought Standard Oil, John Rockefeller. None of them, of course, were Jewish. So, I think that can be exaggerated, and I think it's part of a scapegoating, frankly, that continues.
I was going to say, I don't know if you've heard this screed. I think Tom Hartman played it on his program, but it was Raphael Cruz Sr. in one of his things about taking the money to give it to the Gentiles.
Hmm. Now, I haven't heard that screed, but that
the Jewish people have all the money and
I guess. I don't know what it means. I'll tell you
Jewish,
something.
But I thought... I believe in the Holocaust. I read The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich.
Yeah, and really, there's that. That's another thing, by the way. It's interesting you say I believe in the Holocaust. I don't see too many people around the globe denying that the American Revolution happened, right? Denying that George Washington was the first president. And yet there's far, far, far more evidence of the Holocaust, which after all is 70 years ago, and we have, you know, everything from pictures and video and documents and living witnesses. We have much less.
Nuremberg?
We have, yeah, not to mention everything at Nuremberg. We have much less evidence of the American Revolution. Now, obviously, I believe the American Revolution occurred, but my point is that in terms of historical evidence, the evidence for the Holocaust dwarfs by 1,000 times the evidence of the American Revolutionary War. And yet no, you don't hear anybody talk about Revolutionary War denial because people would be like, huh, what? I do fear that 20 years from now, when there are no more survivors left alive, I fear it's already growing. It's growing in Russia. It's growing in Iran. And when you think, and this isn't just Jew hatred, which of course it is. It's more than that. It's when you deny genocide, you are not just denying the genocide of the Jews. You are basically making it easier for anyone to commit genocide around the globe, whether it be Rwanda or Cambodia or Syria or Darfur. And so I think Holocaust denial is an extremely, extremely dangerous thing.
But I wonder whether, you know, the growing income inequality, I mean, so many people just aren't having a chance anymore. And I think here in America, well, I lived near the Pentagon on 9/11. Mm-hmm. You know, Crystal City is near
I drove by the Pentagon on 9/11. I saw it aflames as I drove home from, I was working for Barney Frank at the time, and I crossed over the 14th Street Bridge.
Yeah, I had smoked for quite a while.
Yeah, I passed it in flames.
Yeah, I don't harbor this resentment. I mean, that was a one group, and I think they're finding that it was maybe primarily Saudi Arabia that did this, and that you can't blame the whole Muslim world.
But the great majority of the people who did the act were Saudi citizens. Now, whether the Saudi government was behind it or not is an open question that people still.
Well, that's
but,
true.
But certainly the people who committed the act, the vast majority of them were Saudis.
You had something last week about, you know, maybe discrimination against women, which I certainly had to fight the glass ceiling in my career. Some of us eventually ended up suing for pay equity, which is, you know, under gender discrimination,
sure,
which is different than say sexual harassment. You know, I mean,
right.
But there was definitely gender discrimination.
Well, there's a lot of discrimination, and when I look at the rise of Donald Trump, to me, it's the rise of the, I'll just say it, angry, uneducated, poor white man. I think that's, well, or working class, maybe even middle class white man. It's, you know, when you think about this country, you know, straight white Christian men sort of had power. Although, actually, when you look at the poorer, you know, the working class of that group, they really didn't have that much power. I've long talked on this show about how even, you know, poor white Southerners who had no slaves were the majority of the Confederate Army. Very few white men with slaves had them because they got to stay home on their plantations and take care of them. So, but the poor white man felt like, yeah, I may be trod upon. Yeah, I may have no money. Yeah, I might not have an education, but I'm better than the black man. I'm better than the woman. I'm better than the immigrant. I'm better than the Jew. I'm better than these gay people. I'm better than these immigrants. I'm better than someone. And in fact, you can look at the immigrants, right? The English thought they were better than the Germans who came in the 1840s, and they thought they were better than the Irish who came in the 1880s, and they thought they were better than the Jews and Italians who came in the turn of the century, and they thought they were better than the Latinos and Asians that come in today. And all of them thought they were better than blacks. It's this weird notion that of people being judged not, as Martin Luther King said, not on the content of their character, but on the color of their skin or on their ethnicity. And
their sex.
Or their gender, sexual orientation.
It was suggested to me in the nicest way that maybe I shouldn't worry so much about advancement, but find a nice guy and
yeah,
cook
that's
what he
pure
likes.
Pure sexism. Pure sexism. So what I think as America comes to realize that all humanity has value and that people of every gender and culture and religion and sexual orientation and race, that all of us are The only thing that's certain about that, the only thing we all have the same as humans is that we're all different. I mean, that's you know, we all have different, unless I guess you're an identical twin, and even then there's some differences among you. We're all different. As we're learning this, I think the backlash often says that's political correctness. This idea that you're going to treat women like men, the idea that you're going to treat blacks, whites, Latinos, Asians the same, that's all political correctness. And it's the resentment of the idea that all of us have a place in America, not only a very select group of people. In fact, it would be white Englishmen with property prior to Andrew Jackson, right? I mean, a very, very tiny group of people should have all the power in America. And it's this resentment, I think, that fuels Donald Trump. And it's another reason why I think Donald Trump is going to lose in a landslide, because America is no longer a country of English white men with property. I think we're much more diverse than that right now.
Well, I'm not a Holocaust denier.
I know you're not. No, please don't take any of that as a criticism. No, I'm not criticizing you.
Oh, no, I didn't take it personally. I do think one problem, when they set up Israel, they should have made it an accommodation or country for the Palestinians, too. And maybe there wouldn't be as much trouble.
You know, it's interesting. There are some 23 or so Arab states in a population that in an area that's larger than the United States, the Arab countries from Morocco in the west all the way to Iraq in the east. There's a vast population. Now, a lot of those countries are badly run. A lot of them are very dangerous. This is part of the problem with Syria and Libya and other countries today. But there are vast, vast, vast areas of Arab states. There's only one Jewish state, and it's tiny.
Right.
It's about the size of New Jersey. People don't realize how small Israel is. With the West Bank, it's the size of Vermont. Hardly a massively large country. It's a tiny country. Without the West Bank, it is 8 miles wide. The West Bank, of course, was basically where the armistice line stopped when the Arab countries came in to invade Israel. I do think that the Arab Palestinians do deserve, absolutely, they deserve rights. They deserve a country of their own. But let's not, I absolutely think a Jewish state is a necessity. There are still 500,000 Holocaust survivors in Israel today, still to this day. And they would have literally had no place to go. They had no country would take them except Israel, even after the war. In fact, there were people, survivors, who went back to Poland after the Holocaust and tried to reclaim their homes, the homes they built, the homes they bought, the homes they lived in. And, well, what had happened? Their Polish neighbors had taken their homes, had stolen their property, and they weren't allowed back in. And there were massacres in Poland in 1946, in 1947. Because the Jews were not allowed to return to their homes in Europe. They literally had no place to go. So I am all for a Palestinian state, but there absolutely has to be a Jewish state. We can argue about its boundaries, but Israel has to exist. And I do think
I agree.
I just want to be
fair. I just, you know, I did meet at least the child of a Holocaust survivor here. I think here in New Mexico, there are some of the Spaniards who are outwardly Catholic, but
that's another interesting part of history. I'll tell you something, man. I got to take a break because we're coming up on a break. Oh, but that's a very interesting part of history, and you're absolutely right. In New Mexico, dates back the Inquisition. There were Jews who were forced to hide their Judaism that still exists in New Mexico today. I'll be right back with more 888-48 Mark right after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Thank you for listening to a very serious topic. We'll get back to election news and everything tomorrow, but it was on my mind. You know, it's hard to talk about these things. It's hard to talk about moral failures. It's hard to talk about mass annihilation. And yet these are lessons we must learn, we must remember. It's definitely not a Jewish thing. It's a human thing. And the next time you have refugees fleeing genocide, remember what happened when we didn't let them in. This is Mark Levine. My website's marklevinetalk.com. Talk to you tomorrow.